Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 391.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we admit that meditation isn't my thing, okay? It didn't list it as one of my resolutions, but I was giving it like a little bit of a try. And it's just like, I want to be Zen, all right? I want to be fucking Zen like everybody else. But it's just not like fun. And I'm looking for a meditation that's more fun. So if someone has like a just super fun version of becoming Zen, I'm all ears, okay? Today, we're not going to talk about my Zen-ness. Instead, we're going to talk about a bunch of things that are decidedly not Zen, like the Golden Globes, like Harvard's recent resignation. We're going to talk a little bit about Trump. And finally, we'll look at the use of AI in online dating. Today's panel, it's panel par excellence. It's a panel that's just been custom made for today. This is an haute couture 2024 winter season, the best panel. Joining us for the 1,000,000th time is she's a comedian that you've heard on all audio platforms, including NPR. You've seen her on stages around the country and in Canada, by the way, where she's originally from. And you love her podcast. It's called Parenting is a Joke. And I love her podcast. It is the wonderful Ophira Eisenberg. Hey, Ophira.
Hello. I have a fun meditation for you.
Do you?
Yeah, it's called Drugs and Alcohol, Baby.
That's right.
That's how
That's
you get Zen, just quick and easy.
Right. That does sound more fun. Ophira, it's so great to have you. And I will let you know if I try. As listeners know, I've done a lot of drugs of late, in a public fashion. So let's, you know, alcohol is not really my thing, but I
That's fine. You got drugs.
But my next drug in the bucket on the bucket list is MDMA, which I've never done. So let's see what happens. I will let you know. Now, also joining us on the panel today, and I don't know if she's ever taken MDMA, but frankly, that should be a question that I ask all panelists. Okay, from Andrew, going forward, we need a full accounting of whether or not these people have done Molly. But here's the thing. She's a tremendous comedian. She is who I've just seen in live shows just absolutely obliterate audiences with her charm and her wit. She has a podcast called Ruined, where she ruins, or her co-host ruins, the plot of horror movies. Which I think is fun because I am such a one that will never watch a horror movie. I do not want to feel scared, but I'm happy to hear about them in the abstract. And you've seen her handiwork all over television because she's just so fancy. It is the wonderful Allison Leiby.
Hello. I have done MDMA.
So, okay, good. Okay, good. So we can continue to do the show.
I would like to introduce myself on podcast now, being like, I'm Allison Leiby and I've done MDMA. I've done Molly. It's not meditation, but it is like adjacent, I would say, is ever since New Year's Day, I've started, I start the day by dunking my face in an ice bowl, like an ice bath, like a mixing bowl full of ice water. And I am addicted in a way that I'm like, oh no, what kind of person am I about to become? But it is
a facial plunge.
So you put, yes. you take a bowl.
Yeah, like a big mixing bowl that you could put your face in. Fill it with ice and water, like 50-50, like just cold water.
Yeah.
And put it in. You start at like 3 seconds at a time, which is all you can handle. It's very intense, but it clears my sinuses first thing in the morning every day. No. And I have like not had any issues breathing in this like nightmarish winter weather. It's also great for your skin, and it wakes me up. I like wait an hour to have coffee. I don't even need coffee.
Wow. So you wake up, you brush your teeth, mm-hmm. and when does the bowl happen? Like how
it's
many
like the
minutes
first thing I do after
bed?
I brush my teeth. I brush my teeth. Sometimes I do it before I brush my teeth because then I can just do like teeth, and because like you got to put some moisturizer on afterwards.
Oh, uh-huh. This is fascinating. Okay.
It's great.
But,
I'm really
Nikki said
in.
Fun, just to be clear.
Allison has done Molly, but it's not clear that she knows what fun is.
Can I ask you one more question about this thing? Other than what do you do with the water after? Yeah. I hope you use it to water plants. Or
I do use
recycled.
It to water plants.
Thank you. But where did you find out about this? Is this of your own invention?
TikTok. Obviously, TikTok is where I'm learning everything these days. Okay, but it's like, I know cold plunges are a thing. I love a cold plunge, but I live in New York City. I don't have room for that in my home, nor is it in my building or easily. So, but then
are
I saw
like
this.
Are you part Viking or something? Is that?
I don't know. I don't mind the cold. It like really doesn't bother me. So it perhaps was an easier kind of on ramp for me than for others. But,
all right, Ilsa, we got you frozen.
Someone has a child in elementary school. I might join you in this, Allison. Let's see.
Give it a
I
whirl.
Will report back.
Yes.
People of Faith the Nation who wants to do it. I'm scared, but I'm titillated.
It is scary, but it is invigorating. And like to start the day kind of like I really have a slow
on ramp
to the day. So I needed something that was gonna speed it up because otherwise it's like 2 p.m. and I'm like, I guess I should eat breakfast. You know, that's
oh,
not,
God.
We can't live like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I like to think of myself as like I'm not a morning person or a night person. Mm. I'm like a late morning person.
Yes. I'm a lunch person.
Yeah, like 11:30, I start to shine, you know? All right, folks, before we get into the show, I just want to remind you that we are still doing Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad, you can get extra episodes of the show every month for as little as $4 a month. So just subscribe, support. Thank you so much to everyone that subscribed. For just the cost of a latte, you get to get extra episodes of the show. You get to support the show that you love, I'm assuming and hoping. So go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. We have some really fun conversations and I always love bringing them to you. So patreon.com/Nagin Farsad to join. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. So the stars were out at the Golden Globes, which officially marks the start of the awards season. And before we get into this year's Golden Globes, I just wanted to ask about the Golden Globes in general, because after the scandals of the last couple of years, I was sort of surprised that they were still around. You know what I mean? There was like that really super weird shutdown Golden Globes where the ceremony was behind closed doors and then no one was in attendance.
Yeah,
and then
it was on Twitter.
It was on Twitter. So, and then last year, it's funny because I actually even just super forgot that last year Jerrod Carmichael hosted, and that seemed to buoy the awards. Were you guys surprised that they managed to kind of like live to award another day?
Yeah. Not only that, I watched them. Not only that, I was like, who else is watching this? And then I saw the commercials, and they were all for adult diapers and menopause medicine. And I was like, got it.
So it was like Fox News.
I don't think they think anyone's watching it.
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah.
It's just a live streamed work event. Like, it's not really anything.
I mean, just to jump ahead, I wish it was more fun because it does not look like a good time. Like, that was the one reason to tune in, was just to see people kind of unravel because they're having fun and getting wasted.
Yeah. Right. Now everyone seems like so careful. in a way that's really antithetical to the entire purpose of the Golden Globes, which is to be the dumb award ceremony.
I think social media is ruining that because, like, things get clipped so much that, like, if you were, like, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, if you were, like, caught on camera at the Globes, like, being drunk and, like, saying something silly or, like, you know, tripping over your chair or something, I guess people could be like, maybe they would tweet it and be like, whoa, that was so funny, like in the moment, and it would make a roundup the next day. And that would be, but like now it's like that video is captured. Everybody is just clipping up everything to make content out of it that like it could live on and like actually ruin your life instead of being like a funny anecdote.
Funny thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Social media ruined another thing.
Yep.
The illustrious Golden Globes. Talk about an easy target.
I know. Talk about, and it's, you know, and just as a reminder, one of the reason, I mean, there was like a bribery scandal, but there was also the idea that there was like literally not one black voter in this international, you know, cabal of voters. So the Hollywood Foreign Press had a lot of work to do, and apparently they're doing, you know, they're like kind of trying to fix some of that. Now this year, they had hosting the show Joe Coy. Now, I don't know him personally. Maybe you guys know him.
I do not.
Okay. I've met him, but that's not to know.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So like
to meet is not to know.
Yeah. Especially among stand-up comedians. I would say he's gotten a lot of flack, and I watched the monologue and it was not as miserable or horrible as everyone is saying. I don't know. Did you guys watch the monologue? Like, I didn't feel he, like, people were literally like, oh my God, cringe, how horrible. He was terrible, you know? And I was like, and again, this is not me being like, I love the collected works of Joe Coy. I'm not trying to defend him or anything. I don't know him. I don't know that much of his work or whatever. But I do feel a little like, you fucking try hosting an awards show, you piece of shit. Like, there's a little bit of like, you don't talk shit about comedians. That's for me to do, you know what I mean? Like, I immediately felt defensive about it.
I can't believe he took the gig, or anyone takes that gig, who is not already sitting in that room invited,
right?
Not for nothing did Jim Gaffigan say no? He was there,
right? I mean, he might have he was in a much better position.
Better position, right? But I think that suicide gig. I don't care who you blame it on in the moment as you are circling down the death drain. But you know, so whatever. It was like, you blame the writers, never sell your writers the bus. It's like, no one even thought about writers in this way until a strike happened, and they were like, "Where's my show?" So people just were awakened to the fact that there are writers.
Yes.
But I literally think get Meryl Streep to do it. Get fucking Leo DiCaprio to do it. Like, get someone in that room to do it.
Yeah.
So Joe Coy took the job 10 days before the ceremony, which again, why did it? I mean, I think you're right. You have to be like an A-list celebrity to do the job, which is why people loved, you know, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. They're also going to like really shut up and listen when they're talking.
Right? And they have two of them. I do think it's a two-person job.
It is for sure a two-person job because everyone is talking. Everybody's like they're all like catching up and having a party. Like they don't like it's a lot easier to focus if there's like two people up. It just feels like it's a two-person job. And like then like you don't have to just like when a joke fails, you guys can riff. Like, didn't Che and Jost do no, they did the Emmys one year. But it's just like it just makes more sense in general for award shows to have a two-hander up there.
You need a pal. You need a buy-in up there.
Also, so that when things suck, you can have someone to
cry. So you're not alone up there like Anne Hathaway was with James Franco.
And you can blame each other, not your writers.
Exactly.
Right. So that we can get into this like fun, self-deprecating, like mini roast scenario with your co-host. And I think can be more fun.
But can I just point out the 10 days thing, which I find very funny because I'm like, to 2 months? Like, come on now. Like
we only had
10 days. It's not
the
Olympics.
Oh, the 10 days things. Right.
It's not the Olympics. Okay. Right. You're going to go out to a couple clubs for a week and like that's an appropriate amount of time.
It is and it isn't, right? Because it's like, I don't know. I just don't think, this is just weird. I just don't think he was famous enough. That's just like my
main thing. And he didn't like, Yeah, sorry to cut you off. He didn't introduce himself at the beginning. And, like, we know who he is just because, like, we live in the comedy world and thus, like, know all of the players, even if we don't, like, know their work very well. But, like, I feel like 80% of that room was like, who is that? And then he just started, you know, doing the jokes that are, you know, making fun of the people in that room. And they're like, wait, but who are you? And why are you here? I think if he had just, like, gotten himself kind of introduced up top and been a little self-deprecating, then it would have gone much better.
It would have gone better, right, right.
And it was all still fine. Like, I don't think anything was, like, so... I've heard much worse things in many rooms across New York and this country than I had on that live stream.
Can I ask you guys about what two of the awards that they introduced this year? One of them was Cinematic and Box Office Achievement for films grossing at least $100 million. Domestically and $350 million internationally. And they also introduced an award for Best Stand-Up Special. What did you guys think of these awards being introduced into the fray?
I mean, I like that stand-up gets a... Because, like, it usually in other award shows gets lumped in this weird, like, with the Writers Guild Awards or, like, even with the Emmys, it's, like, best... So, like, somebody's stand-up hour is up against the televised Oscars, and you're like... I don't know how you're supposed to evaluate those two things against each other. So, like, I do think it's cool because, like, I don't think most award shows that address entertainment and television and film, like, address stand-up on its own. The award existing, good. I don't know if I agree with, you know, who they gave it to, but that's...
Right. They gave it to Ricky Gervais, by the way, who was not there to accept it, which I thought
hilarious.
Was interesting.
So funny. But Cinematic Box Office Achievement, I mean, you guys already got your money. I don't know what you need the statue for.
It's weird because is the achievement that you just won the that you just got the most money, in which case we already know who the award should go to. It's the one that we already know made the most money. Like, it's just a weird, it's like among these movies that made the most money, now we're going to make a critical assessment. Like, it was just weird.
Well, you know, they want to have that category in the Oscars too, because the takeaway from all the movies that win usually are like, you know, these amazing, let's say, artistic pieces that for the most part, nobody in America watched.
Yes.
Right.
And so they want to have the same thing to recognize like, yeah, well, what about, you know, John Wick or whatever. Am I even saying that right? Yeah, that's right.
John Wick.
I don't know why I was going for Wick. Like, why not? Why not give it to that? I mean, but I think it is hilarious because it's sort of like, okay, here's some things that we think are good, whether you agree or not. And here's what America thought.
Yeah.
Oh, totally different.
But also don't, I mean, but the Oscars tried to introduce that award, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes.
And everyone was like, you assholes. And like basically like 5 minutes later, they were like, just kidding. That's a bad idea. And we didn't mean it. And
I mean, they should just lean into it and be like, and the Bank of America award goes.
Well, so one last thing on the stand-up special award. So Ricky Gervais won it. I think he was also the most viewed special on Netflix when Netflix did that data dump over the holidays.
Right.
And whether or not you like the special, I mean, like, I've enjoyed Ricky Gervais over the years. Like, I can say 45 different things analyzing that special and like the themes in it. But let's, you know, I think it's interesting there's this world of, you know, the victimized comedian. And now that victimized comedian is so victimized. They're victimized. They're not allowed to talk, you guys. They're not allowed to say what they want to say, guys. And then they go and say what they want to say. How weird. And then they talk about how they're not supposed to say the thing that they're saying and that they get demonized for it. But then they just actually totally get super rich and rewarded for it. So I don't even know what anyone's talking about in the first place.
Agreed.
Those are my feelings on it. I don't know, Ophira, what do you...
That was pretty eloquent. That was pretty eloquent. Yeah, and you're all right. I mean, I think it's just so funny, this whole thing. And I'm sure, I imagine you have all been asked this, where someone you don't know outside of the comedy world comes up to you and goes like, oh my God, do you just feel like completely handcuffed on stage? Like you can't say what you really want right now?
Yes, every
interview. I always go, no.
No. I have a whole hour about my own abortion. I think I can say whatever I want at this point.
I'm fine. I guess I'm not just being racist, sexist, homophobic, like, you know, like what? No, I'm fine. So I feel like, you know, it is also doubling down on something that I feel like doesn't totally exist. It like exists in people's minds. It's like, oh, politically correct. Woke people have ruined. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, no, we just, we're trying to say that hate is not tolerated in stand up. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's this weird form of like ideological trauma dumping or something. Like they just want to, you know, they just want to be like, but things are bad for me too. And like, it's like, no, things don't actually have to be bad for anyone for stand-up exist.
Yes.
It's like not about that. And I think we've gotten into this weird world where there's a perception that things, there, you know, things have to be about that or something for it to be mean. I don't know. Allison, final thoughts on that?
It feels lazy because it's like, oh, you just don't want to write new stuff. So you're going to talk about how your old stuff didn't really go that well. Like it just to me is like, it's somebody who's just trying to spin out. You know how you take, sometimes you have like one dumb line and you're like, I could turn that into a 5-minute bit. And then it's like the whole thing is noise. And it's just like, oh, I should have just written other stuff. Like that's what it feels like to me. It's lazy.
I always think of you know, the wonderful comedian that I know both of you know, Kendra Cunningham, because I'll like watch her tell a story about fucking eating a muffin, and it'll just be like the 5 best minutes of my day is to like listen to her talk about a muffin, and you're just like, if Ricky Gervais could just take a page out of this book right here, like he doesn't need to do all this other shit to be funny. He's funny, you know? He's just looking for an angle to be edgy or whatever. And it's like, dude, eat a muffin and then like write about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that's all you need.
Jim Gaffigan made a career on that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Jim Gaffigan made a career out of it, and then people like Kendra Cunningham have perfected the art.
And Kendra Cunningham needs to make more of a career, because that muffin bit, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right, folks, let's move on. Let me know, what did you think? Do you care about the award season? I oddly do care about award season. Like I just love the cultural conversation around what did we love, what do we hate, what should I go be watching before the Oscars, all that. I'm into it. Listeners, hit me up. What do you think? Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into our next topic. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. So we're going to talk about politics in various forms, but first, when we were coming to the studio, Andrew and I noticed this wonderful headline that I just thought I would read because we fixate so much on the negative. We talked about How to Survive 2024 last week because of a wonderful Substack piece from Amanda Ripley. And again, I do want to share good news in that we read this headline that was U.S. carbon emissions fell in 2023 as coal use tumbled to new lows. The drop was big. I'm just reading from the New York Times here, but emissions would need to fall three times as fast for the rest of the decade if the country wants to meet its climate goals. Okay, but I just want to say, we had a huge drop in emissions, and that's cool.
Good.
And I recognize that it's not enough, again, because I know that's what everyone, but Nagin, it's not enough, and like, whatever, basically, kill yourself, it's over. But I want to take the position that this year, so in 2023, it fell at this number, and then you know how like, that when they first made flat screen TVs, they were like $35,000 or whatever. And now you can buy a flat screen TV for like $300. So they figured out how to make it for like nothing. That's what happens if you give people a minute to sort these things out. So the big drop, there was a big drop this year. Okay. Maybe the next few years we'll even see even bigger drops because we're like knowing how to do it now. You know what I mean? Like we're going to get to the point where the flat screen TV is just $300. Anyways, that's just a theory.
I love it.
I don't know. I love it. But you know, yeah. What do you guys think?
I think hitting a goal of 0.1% might not do a lot. So I'd love it to double to 0.2%.
Let's double. All right. But we just wanted to start with a little bit of good news. But beyond that, let us talk about the hullabaloo that ensued from the congressional testimony. We talked about this before the holidays, you know, where Harvard and a couple of other presidents of universities testified. They did poorly. There was, for Claudine Gay, the president of Harvard, there was an additional plagiarism scandal that seemed to plague her in the last weeks. And after all of that, her position seemed untenable, and she has now resigned. Now, I guess, after we initially talked about this, Claudine Gay seemed to be the survivor of this situation. Like, she didn't seem like she was going to have to resign because of the congressional testimony. And then there was a sort of politically motivated investigation into her, into plagiarism. And which I'm not trying to say the plagiarism is not wrong, by the way. But the timing, you know, and the person who funded it and all that stuff, there was a lot going on there. Christopher Rufo, who published a newsletter with the headline, "Is Claudine Gay a Plagiarist?" And he did that on December 10th. So that was politically motivated. Were you surprised that this all kind of turned around in this way?
No. Like, nothing surprises me anymore about the way this country functions. And I don't know, you know, I know broad strokes, the story, but not like the nitty gritty. But to me, this feels a lot like when you look at all of the things that our political resources could be investing in to investigate or to deal with. This is like when I haven't had a vegetable in 10 days and I'm like, I should get a haircut. And it's like, eat a salad. Like, it's just not the thing to focus on, like,
right,
big picture. But I also feel like a lot of the same, like, people that are, you know, excited and happy that she resigned over the plagiarism are the same people who are just like, AI is the future and we don't need writers anymore. Like, that is like, there feels like that Venn diagram is right, close to right, a circle. And that to me is just like, I mean, what are we doing?
It's interesting too, when you look at the board members of Harvard and the, you know, the articles make perfectly clear that the board members that are, you know, puppeteering this whole thing, and Claudine herself, they're all from fortunes, right? They're all from fortunes. And I feel like they didn't mock it, but it was like, as they all dissipated during Christmas time to various resorts, and Claudine was dead set on still with the controversy, take your family to Rome. Anyways, like, it definitely paints a picture.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to me that these board members, as far as I could tell, with the ones that are name checked in the articles, they are not the CEOs or the business people or the, I don't know, like the acting within these grand fortunes. They are all heirs. Mm-hmm. They are heirs.
Yeah, yeah. One of them's the heir to the Tootsie Roll company.
They're
heiring.
That's their life. They're heiring.
Yeah.
Comedy
yeah.
of errors.
Get out of here.
That would have been good. And I just think of like, I mean, again, I have no idea what it's like to be in the shoes, but I just started thinking about like that kind of lifestyle, growing up in that, and then you're put in these positions, big decisions, huge topics, complicated topics, and things you don't care about. You think any of these people care about plagiarism?
No.
I mean, plagiarism is adorable at this point.
Right. Now, to be clear, Harvard does have like an anti-plagiarism position.
Sure, of course. Academic institution.
Yeah. Also, I heard from Emily Bazelon, who's a professor at Yale and also a journalist, that the plagiarism that was cited here kind of amounts to like a misdemeanor charge of plagiarism. It isn't like she didn't steal ideas. She stole snippets of technical definitions Or paragraphs summing up other scholars' research that were like lightly paraphrased instead of, I guess, heavily paraphrased, which would have been better or something.
Sounds like how I went through college. So
I mean, yeah. Which again, 100%. Like a professor,
what notes are for?
Yeah,
professor should be better than that, and whatever. And I totally get it, but also it's just one of these things where. The timing, like this is what's going to bring her down. And what is, my question for you guys on a political front is like I want to understand how this helps the conservative cause. If you're a conservative voter, maybe you guys have conservative voters in your family. I do. Are they like, I really want to take down the president of Harvard? Like, I truly like for, you know, I have a cousin who votes, you know, for Trump. And I don't think he's ever thought about the president of Harvard. Like, yeah. I don't know that this is a feather in his cap or something. I just don't know that he's put, you know, clapping at this, like that he's happy about it in any way. I don't know what it does. What does it do? Why does anyone care?
To me, it feels like it shows the difference between the Republican base and the Republicans who are running that party, because they are all rich people who think this is important. They all went to Harvard and Princeton and Yale. Like is not all of them. I mean, we've seen Congress, but a lot of I think that like, the big names and money of like the old and still some of like the Ted Cruz of the Republican Party think that this is important. But I think that the base that they're trying to appeal to is like, I don't care about Harvard. I don't think about Harvard. I don't I don't know what plagiarism is. Like, not to diminish like who those voters are, but I don't think that's something that they concern themselves with day to day. And like, if anything, this could be a helpful tool in separating those voters from those politicians, because that is a pretty big gap in interest, I think.
Yes.
The drain the swamp people aren't like plagiarism. That's my real problem. I mean, it does sort of fall into the category of nobody cares. But I do think, you know, obviously there's like the whole other issue, which is that she didn't come out with a very strong position on what was going on in the Middle East. And then there was all these like protests happening. And then this body of students said they felt unsafe. And this body of students said they felt unsafe. And then she didn't fucking deal with it. And then they were planning on her doing an apology tour. I mean, the whole thing is just like a mess. So that's when you start going, well, how many counts of plagiarism can we cite?
Mm. Right. Sure. Right. It's like, get them on taxes instead of the actual like murder or whatever.
Right. And when the heir to the Hyatt Hotels has a couple guests going like, well, my son goes to Harvard and we're not sure about this. That's where it starts.
And I think you're right, Ophir, that it actually like would have just been more reasonable to fire her because of her handling of the congressional testimony. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you're just like, you're going to fire over this instead of like the bigger thing. Like the bigger thing was the bigger thing. And also I want to say for colleges, like when you're hiring a president, it's like you're hiring a spokesperson, and they should be good at spokespeopling, you know? And if they can't, I encourage you to think to look at improv comedians, because they're just going to be better on their feet. You know what I mean? Like, if you're looking for a good president of your university, give improv comedians a series of game boundaries. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Call it this is just an improv game where the boundaries are anti-racism and, you know, and like the safety of students, and go, you know what I mean? Go make speeches. And I feel like they would do an excellent job, but it's like often what we've seen is that they've hired people that are like actually not tremendous at spokespeopling. And I think that's interesting.
Nikki, do you know offhand how long she was in that position?
I think
it was
6 months,
right?
So the shortest of Harvard's ever.
Yeah.
Real sad. All right. Let us move on quickly to an unsavory figure in American life, Trump. And we're just going to talk about this very briefly, because there has not been a determination on this yet. But Trump's lawyers basically this week tried to make the case that Trump can't go to criminal trial because as president, he is immune, and everything he was doing, including all the stuff around January 6th, including all the stuff around election claims, those were all done as a president in the office of the president, and therefore he can't be charged with anything. I felt this was hilarious. That's the only reason I want to bring it up, because the judges, the 3-person judge panel, was very skeptical about the sweeping position that Trump's lawyers took. They brought up a hypothetical assassination, like if the president had called for, you know, had someone assassinated, would they still be immune from criminal prosecution because they were president at the time, basically. And the lawyers were like, so I just thought that was fun and ridiculous. Ophira, what did you think?
I seem to remember in my citizenship exam to become an American,
yes,
you get asked the following question. What is the rule of law?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And the rule of law is that no one in any position as an American citizen is exempt from the laws.
That's the answer.
That's the answer.
Okay.
No one.
Does everybody know that? I feel like this is news to a lot of people right now.
I don't think that is common knowledge.
It is. I'm telling you, it is. You have 100 questions to study for, and that is one of them. What is the rule of law?
Allison, what do you think of these proceedings? And I did not know that that was on a citizenship. That was one of the citizenship questions. I'm heartened.
It's all like drifting into sketch comedy in a way that is damaging to both American politics and also comedy, is how these proceedings all feel. Like, having worked in political comedy for so long, I'm like, how are we supposed to heighten this stuff anymore? Like, that is where it really is, you know, that's where it really starts to hurt me.
Right. Prosecutions in space, that's how you heighten it.
Yeah, it's all very it's like caveman lawyer, or like what it's all starting to feel like Phil Hartman in a way that sucks for both things.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's and even just like hearing, you know, there's like this great audio of the court proceedings and just to hear the arguments, and you don't really need any comedy writers. Could just throw that audio into AI and let it do its own thing. It's maybe the only instance in which I would allow AI to do anything.
Right. We're just going to get a lot of comics doing like facial expressions, just like what? That's all we do. Just
exactly. Some spit back. Takes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that still has not been decided. I heard an interesting theory somewhere, I think maybe on the Brian Lehrer show, I can't remember where, that basically one of the ideas is that the judges will sort of subconsciously or consciously say no one is above the law, as per Ophira Eisenberg. They will cite Ophira in their findings. No one is above the law, and so he can be tried. So that's ridiculous. And then they might, on the other case about can he be on the ballot in Colorado, they may relent on that, so that it's sort of like there's a win on both sides and no one gets upset. Or like there's enough for people to like not, you know, fully lose their minds.
Oh, good. As long as no one's upset.
Exactly. I wouldn't want anyone to lose sleep.
All right, folks, let us move on to topic number 3. So we read a piece in Mashable by Saira Mueller titled, "I put AI photos on my Hinge dating profile. They were the most liked by far." And look, the title says it all. She noticed that more and more AI-generated selfies were being shared online. And what's more, they were being shared on dating apps where, you know, you're supposed to put your best foot/face forward, but also you're supposed to present a realistic depiction of yourself so that when you go on that harrowing first date, you know who to look for. So she puts these AI-generated selfies on her own profile to see how they kind of perform compared to her regular photos. And I guess my first question is, like, what's your experience in, I've done online dating. I don't know if the two of you have done online dating, but if you have, like, what is your experience with the photos and picking them? And do you ever feel like you're posting something that's like a little too good?
Well, I've never posted something too good. That's for sure. I've only like dabbled in online dating over the years for like brief periods and then been like, this is not for me. And then every like 5 years I have to like try again. And then I remember, yeah. Like, of course, I this isn't something I enjoy. But like all profiles have always felt like AI because they're all the same. Like everything is like, everyone's just trying to have a profile that like will perform the best so that the most people will want to go out with them. So they have the most choices for somebody who might actually be a match. But then it just like kind of like ends up being everybody likes travel and family and restaurants and everyone has a photo of them like at a wedding holding a fish. Like it's like it already was AI and like I'm like, I don't know how far a jump was this at this point.
True. Oh, yeah. Farrah, what's your experience with the photo picking?
It was a long time ago. So I remember too, I was like, I was mad at the whole interface and prospect that it existed. So I remember I put up a headshot and one, and I was just like, that's what it is. You know, like deal with it. But I also think like, oh yeah, it's all false, basically. Like the job with online dating is to scroll through the false stuff and figure out if there's anything in there that should be investigated. Yeah, you're like, as a detective, would I like to know more?
Right. You're
but
like,
it's all garbage.
Right. You're like special committee doing like, you know, trying to find the unearth. You're Mueller trying to find the truth every time you're going on a dating profile. I remember like posting photos and being a little embarrassed because I had to, at the time, do a bunch of like press photos of myself for like, I don't remember. It was like Edinburgh or something. Like I just needed a lot of photos. You know, when you're a comedian, like you just kind of need a lot of photos that you can send for different shows and they use them for promotion or whatever. And so I used a couple that were like still like looking like a regular person, but they were just like a little nicer because a professional photographer had taken them, you know? And I did feel like, is this too good of a, like, is this sending the wrong signal that I look this, you know, like everything magically behind me is like in soft focus and I'm just like popping in the center here. You know what I mean? There was like some moments where I was just like, oh, this feels a little embarrassing, but I'm just going to post them because I guess you're supposed to use your, you know, great photo. But I also agree that I not only, you know, Allison, your point about everything already feels like AI, I find, you know, now that I help friends do some of their profiles, that it is quite boring. If I see the same picture of a person on a mountain, I will murder everybody. Like it's so boring. And everyone is also posting something that like makes them look a little athletic and like, you know, like all that stuff. I can't, it does feel boring. Like it's okay. I don't know. At this point, I'm just like, take a photo of yourself like in a, like a, like in a ditch in something really ugly. I don't know. Yeah.
You are right. I've had this like, I'm honestly idea brewing for a while that I think if you want to make a successful dating site now, it's like literally post your worst photo and you write your profile is the worst things about me, things I hate, things I'm working on. Yep. Like it is like figure out a way to air your worst side.
Yeah. Been on my to-do list for 3 years and I still haven't done it. Like
Instead of that stuff.
Instead of uploading a photo, your phone automatically when you open the app just takes a front-facing photo of you and they're like, that's the photo.
That's it.
It defaults everybody like not no one looks good. It defaults like everybody being AI or everybody being like from below, like multiple chins. Just
yeah, totally.
Like nostrils, just totally. Nostrils.
Well, so the writer, this piece talked to some psychologists about the use of AI, and a lot of these experts attributed it to body dysmorphic disorder, BDD, which, you know, it's interesting. They said that basically 2-3% of Americans have this body dysmorphic disorder, and that I also thought, like, just as a gal having grown up in the 80s and 90s, haven't we always had body dysmorphic disorder like this? Yeah. I get that it's probably on steroids now because you can see AI generated beautiful photos all the time. You know, and when we were growing up, it's like we saw them in magazines.
Right.
I don't know, but I still remember very clearly, like, just comparing myself constantly to other girls, like, all the time. And so this feels a little bit, like, oddly comforting. It's just the same as it ever was, you know?
Same as it ever was. Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like casting has gotten better over the years, just in terms of, like, at least having representation of different kinds of women, because I feel like I grew up on television that was gorgeous. Blonde and skinny and there was the, you know, heroin chic whole thing that was obviously highly problematic about how skinny you had to be, and that was the most fashionable, interesting thing. I feel like most of the women that are now women when we were teenagers idolized eating disorders. Say that.
Oh yeah. I remember in high school there were, like, sections in our sex ed class or whatever about eating disorders, because that people were so concerned about all of us doing it.
Oh yeah. And, like, I've seen on TikTok, which again is where I get everything now. I dunk my face in ice, I learn about body image. But it's like, you know, it's kind of like two sides of the same coin, where it's like we grew up and it was like all you saw was, like, thin, 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 thin. But you only saw it when you were watching television or a movie or reading a magazine. And now 80% of your social life is also online. And, like, these girls get to see, like, you know, more representation and, like, bigger and different bodies. But those bodies are also like airbrushed. They have perfect, everybody's skin looks fake. And it's like, yeah, I guess it's just kind of like a new version of the things that you have. And also Ozempic and all of the other things that make things a little bit different now.
Right. I wish I had discovered British television when I was a teenager, because you're like, these bitches never even got braces. I mean, you don't see a non-straight tooth, barring Steve Buscemi. You do not see the non-straight teeth on American actors. Like, everyone has perfect teeth and the perfect skin. Da, da, da. You turn on a British TV show and you're like, oh, this is where everybody else is, I guess.
There was even a wild thing. I can't remember if it was Coronation Street, like one of their sort of, you know, flagship, most beloved series, where they cast a beautiful person. And as one of the, or was it called Neighbors? That was a big one too, right? Neighbors?
There's one called EastEnders?
Anyways.
Yeah.
EastEnders. And they cast a beautiful person, like, by, I guess, you know, American television standards. And the audience backlashed, and they fight, they kill
hilarious
them off.
Hilarious. I'm into that. I mean, how I think honestly things would have been so different. I remember my friend lived in Ireland for a couple years, and she was just like, she was like, it's weird here because hot guys will date normal looking girls. And I was like, and she's like, I think it's from the TV shows or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I mean, if you're a hot guy and on TV, they're showing every kind of, you know, or what, it's like, okay, you know, anyways, but that's also, like, how sad that we thought that way. Okay. Now this is my last question on these AI generated photos. So when you look at the photos that she posted of the AI, what did you think of those photos? Because my feeling of the photos was that they just look like they had been taken by a photographer. Like, just like they were better. The color correction was better, you know, all that stuff. It just looked like it was more magazine photo.
Yeah.
They didn't look like, you know, anime characters or whatever.
Yeah, it was not manga.
Yeah. So what did you think of the actual photos that, she, you know, she was upset that people liked them more?
They look right. The lighting is right. There's some smoothness. Right. Yes. People are going to like them more because they're just visually more appealing in that artistic way.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, the question wasn't, which is a better representation.
Smooth everything out.
The question was, which is more visually pleasing?
Right.
Well, A watercolor of me is better. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
And they did lack, I mean, when what they were more visually pleasing, and they also did lack personality. They didn't show what she was doing or what she could do or what she was interested in or any of that shit. Like, it was just like, they were like headshots. They were like actor headshots.
Yeah, it was giving me headshots. And it's also like, it's not like it was so where it's like, is that you with the Queen of England? Like, it's not like, you know, those are AI images where you'd be like, wait, when did you go to space? But these just look like headshots. And like, again, like the first time I did the apps, the only people who had headshots were people in the entertainment industry photographers.
Yeah.
So it was always like such a tell where I was like, oh no, that person's like an actor or comedian.
No,
I'm out.
Thank you.
And then the next time, like 5 or 6 years later, when I joined again, it was like when everybody started having better phones and better access to like Photoshop and things like that, where like suddenly everybody looked like they had professional photographs done all the time. And now I'm like, well, then it must be every single person will have something that looks like this.
Yes.
Which then how do you?
And then you see the new phone, the Samsung phone that they were advertising, where if you take group shots, you know, it basically does a little bit of a film, and then basically it will switch everybody's to make sure every single face looks perfect and forward. And it's just like the way we are already just, you know, changing everything. Like, I think at some point very soon, like you said, like you're going to open up your phone and it's just going to take a shot, and that's what's going to be thrown out there. And people are going to be like, that's great, because it will be so entirely different from all of the artifice.
All right, folks, let me know, what do you think? Are you using AI photos? I still have not actually had one done of myself, and I don't know that I want to at all. But anyways, I'm curious, listeners out there, where are you on AI generated photos of yourself? Okay, that is the end of the show. And my God, what a good time I had. Thank you so much for being on the show. And what I really want is for the people of Faith the Nation to be able to find you and all the wonderful things that you do. Ophira Eisenberg, where do they do that?
You can follow me on all the socials at Ophira E.
Follow her on all the socials, guys. Also, you can find out where she's performing.
Yeah, she
Just complete a Canadian tour? Or you're
Not so long ago. No, I just completed one. There will be another one later in the year, but I did complete 18 days.
You posted one of my favorite jokes of 2023 in that Canadian tour announcement, which was something like, let me tell it back to you. It was something like, I'm going to be on tour. I'm going to be gone from my kid for 18 days, like a bad mother or average dad. And I was like, oh yes, nailed it so hard. That hit me. So definitely follow Ophira. For those gems alone, you should follow Ophira. Allison Leiby, where do people follow you?
All socials at Allison Leiby, Alison Leiby. I also post where my shows are. I'm on TikTok. I've only posted two things, and one is a video of my cat staring at me from the darkness of the bathroom. So I don't know if that's your thing, but you could, you know, you could come see what I'm liking on TikTok, which is just deranged wellness trends that I hopefully will stick with.
It's ooh, all ice-based wellness trends.
Yes, all ice.
folks, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/NagineFarsad to support the show. Don't forget to review the show, because that really helps us. It helps people find the show. And I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our fantastic theme music. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum who make the show a possibility. If you want to reach out to us, you can do that at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And otherwise, we will be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum podcast.